Hour 3, RBKD here on the horn. It's Kevin Dunn. It's Rod Babers. It is John Reichel, the birthday boy, turning 27 today. The birthday man, I should say. So he's going to go ahead and play all of his favorite songs. This is one of your favorites, huh?
Yeah, I really like Raspberry Beret. I really like the song.
Yeah.
This may be the best Prince song ever.
This and 1999, I think, are like competing for best Prince song.
And Cream, of course.
Yeah.
I like some of the slower Prince songs. I guess my top Prince songs.
What's your top Prince song?
That's probably When Doves Cry.
Okay.
That's a good one,
Purple
too.
Purple Rain or something
Purple
like
that. Purple Rain's the one everyone knows, yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is my favorite.
I like, I'm a Lil Red Corvette fan. Love me some Lil Red Corvette. Baby, I'm a Star is fantastic.
That is a good song.
No, Prince has got so many. I know you say he's overrated, but he's got so many great
songs. It's like you can name like 10 different songs by Prince, and you said any one of those are your favorite, and no one would be like, no, that's a terrible song. They'd be like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Cause, yeah, I feel like that about Diamonds and Pearls. Some people love Diamonds and Pearls, and I can't stand Diamonds and Pearls. I hate that song. It's a terrible song to me, but some people love Prince's Diamonds and Pearls.
How does it go? I know I've heard it.
Oh, of course. Of course, he literally just sings, Diamonds and Pearls.
Oh, yeah, that's a garbage song.
It is a terrible
When I hear that, that's when I get my overrated stuff.
It is. It's a very overrated Prince song, but I get it. See, John probably loves it. He's like, what are you, idiots?
I don't love that song.
Okay.
I'm not one of those people that say they love that song.
John has taste. We got a lot to get into today. We'll try and clean up everything we can. Whatever we don't hit, we will hit tomorrow. Obviously, lots of stuff with college football. We'll get back to college football. And we'll actually talk about pro football coming up at 6 o'clock as we get ready for the Patriots who are on the road in Buffalo. Look at this. Look at these conditions here.
I'm telling you.
It's snowing.
It's perfect for the Patriots. The Patriots run more 21 personnel than any other team in the NFL, not named the Baltimore Ravens or the San Francisco 49ers. So they use an actual fullback.
Mm-hmm.
They love using an old school fullback. And it's actually simplifying things for Mac Jones since they started really kind of running a more rudimentary, old school, antiquated offense. Mac Jones has thrived. Because you have to devote so many of your defenders you got to defend the run. They're breaking a fullback out on you. Their intention is to run the ball, and they're getting a lot of mismatches and matchup advantages on the outside because of that. So I'm picking the Patriots, but this is a good matchup. This will be the test for this winning streak. Was it a 6-game win streak for the Patriots?
6-game. A lot of people are saying it's competition.
Boom, yeah, exactly, right? They've gone on the road, and I get that. That's a valid argument. This will be the test. I think it's legit. I think the 6-game win streak is legit, mostly. Oh, the wind?
It's windy.
Windy, and it's perfect for this new Patriots style of offense with Mac Jones. No, I love Mike Jones. Who? Mac Jones. I think that the Patriots are going to win, but mostly because of that defense. And that defense is, it's a top, top three scoring defense, if not the top scoring defense in the NFL right now.
I'm taking the Pats to cover because I'm not going to go against the GOAT again.
What's the number?
2.5, I think.
Yeah, you know what? That's the thing. The new rule. Because I've done it twice now in the last year, and it's been dumb both times I've done it. Went against Tom Brady, the GOAT, in the last Super Bowl. You were smart enough to pick the GOAT. And in this instance, I went against Nick Saban. I don't know why I did it.
We talked about doing it and talked about how stupid it was on Friday.
Yeah,
now, that's the definition of stupidity.
Because our eye test had confirmed that Georgia's defense was—
And Alabama's flawed.
Indeed formidable, but— It's the GOAT. You give a GOAT time to prepare. Come on, man.
Give him the rat poison, too. Did you hear him post-game? Or even yesterday talking with Joey Galloway?
It's a great quote.
I don't think I've ever seen Saban smile as long and as hard as he did talking to Joey Galloway during the selection show yesterday.
No, you're right.
And Joey had fun with him. He said, all right. He said, what kind of rat poison do we need to give you for the next couple of weeks? And he goes, we haven't done it consistently. He actually gave like a serious answer.
Yeah. No, because he knows whatever the narrative the media throws out there, he's going to flip it and use it to motivate his guys. And sometimes it's, that Alabama is the best team and Alabama can't be beaten. And that's when he calls it the rat poison, meaning guys, don't believe the hype.
Mm-hmm.
Don't believe it. All right. Don't believe that. because you can go out, anybody can be beaten on any given Saturday. On this end, he meant the rat poison was actually, he called it yummy rat poison, because everybody was picking Georgia and everybody was saying, oh, Georgia's going to dominate up front, kind of some of the same stuff that I was saying.
I was too.
We bet against the Golden, we're wrong. Alabama has been an underdog 3 times in the last 13 seasons and has won every game by at least 17 points.
I know.
So, yeah.
This is one of those until it changes. You just see it once and don't try and pick the time when it ends.
Jimbo beat them this year, so you know though.
We've watched a lot of Alabama, and if you have, that's a flawed team. But this was a great matchup for them. It was a great matchup for what they do and what they don't do, and psychologically. It was a great matchup.
They went after Stetson Bennett. They forced Stetson Bennett to beat him, even though Stetson Bennett didn't have a terrible game. He didn't have a great game. He threw 2 picks. You put this out there on Friday, and it happened, came to fruition. You said if Alabama's going to win, they ain't going to win with 12, 13, 14, 15 play drives. They're going to have some huge chunk yardage plays, big chunk yardage plays in the vertical passing game over the top. That's exactly what they did. Yep, and Jameson Williams became the star of the show.
Jameson Williams. Looks like he's going to be a first-round pick. Two guys that aren't going to be first-round picks but are going to be back at Texas, DeSean Jameson and also DeMarvion Overshone.
Keandre Coburn coming back,
and
too.
And Keandre Coburn.
Add him to the list. So
and good. I mean, all three of those guys need to come back. If you're one of these Texas fans that think that those guys were going to be certainly drafted in the first 5 rounds, you need to get out of your bubble and watch more college football.
Preseason, Overshone had a shot, but not with the season he had.
No, I mean, he would be a 7th-round flyer or UDFA.
Mm-hmm.
Too many false steps. He's not physical enough. Too many bad plays. Too much bad stuff
overruns.
On film. Now, the potential is there, but that's all he is right now is potential.
Yep.
Coburn has to get in different shape. He lost a lot of weight. I think he lost strength to go with that this year. He's going to have to really get with Torrey Becton and say, okay, how do I get my endurance where I want it to be? You know, the thing was, he had some dominant, short but dominant plays a year ago. And I talked about it. It was like, you watch this guy the first play of the drive, and the center's thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be a long day because he was dominant. Yeah. And then that play went down.
Third or fourth series, then it changes. Yeah.
So he wanted to lose weight, gain endurance. He ended up losing strength. And then also DeSean Jameson coming back. All three guys need to come back. I think two of those guys could play in the league in Overshone and Coburn, but they've got a lot to prove before we start thinking about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad all those guys are coming back. Experience is good for a defense in terms of the maturity, and these guys will have another year in the system, knowing the expectations and the technique that PK and the defensive staff want to teach these guys. So that's all good, but they also have to play better.
Yeah.
All three of those guys have to play better. Since they're returning, they're going to be, I think, expected to start. Josh Thompson. For some reason, I want to call him Joshua because he's now moving on.
He's graduated.
Yeah, so Joshua.
It's Joshua.
But Josh Thompson now moving on. They got to find another corner, and that improves the odds that DeSean Jameson is going to be one of those projected starters. He's got to play better, and I'm with you about Keandre Coburn. He's got to play better, too. And Overshone, I mean, he was supposed to be the leader on that defense. And I think this year the linebacking core was arguably one of the biggest liabilities on defense.
Yeah, it was.
People came after him. They attacked that linebacking core.
It definitely was. Yeah. Overshone's just going to have to. It's good that he's coming back. Good that Coburn's coming back. Those guys got to figure it out. What about DeSean Jameson in the secondary? The secondary just wasn't tested a lot because they didn't need to be tested because you could run all over them. But when they were, they failed, including five.
Yeah, I mean, I remember doing the numbers on the secondary, or just on the bombs, 20-plus yard completions allowed. And my number, based on Pro Football Focus, stats that I was looking at, had the Longhorns allowing, I think, around 58% at the end of the season, 58% of their 20-plus yard passes to be completed. I thought teams would go after him more. Remember, West Virginia was the only team that really went after Texas late in the season, went after that secondary. It proved to be a wise decision for them because they made a lot of big plays in the passing game.
Is it 6 of 10 on 3rd and long?
Yeah, they were. Yeah, 6 of 10, 60%. on third and long, third and seven plus.
Jared Daigie,
who led the Big 12 in interceptions and had zero versus Texas.
No, you actually put yourself in the spot to win that.
That's what you want.
It was your game plan that you put out
there.
That's exactly what you want. Third and long and make him turn it over.
You should win that, and Texas couldn't win that. But that's because it goes back to a bigger issue, and this is kind of more about recruiting and a long term fix for Texas. But they need a pass rush. They need actual pass rushers. They need guys who actually can organically apply pressure to the quarterback without having to have a simulated pressure or without games and twists up front necessarily and without even having to blitz. They can just apply pressure. You don't have anybody like that. Joseph Asai was one of those guys, but I think that's why you're seeing the push in the 2022 class for just front seven guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think a lot of them are D linemen, but go look at a lot of them. They are projected to be outside linebackers and pass rushers. And I think that's what they look for. That's why you are horrific on third and long late in the season. I mean, you had to be. I haven't done the math on other teams. You had to be one of the worst teams in the country on allowing third and longs
in the last six games. They have to be. I have some optimism for Jadae Barron. At times he showed good ball skills, and maybe I'm just looking at a secondary that doesn't have a lot of talent, and he's the top guy, but this will be a big spring for him.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think it'll be a big spring for him. We got to look in that secondary. I mean, Anthony Cook, is he coming back? Have we heard that confirmation that he is coming back?
I want to say he was one of the guys that didn't walk.
I want to say it's being reported that he is expected to come back. I don't know if he's made some announcement, but I mean, he was arguably the best player in your secondary last year.
He was the most consistent.
If Jadae Barron can have a really good offseason and you can get improved play from your corners, I think Jadae Barron can end up being, better than Deshaun Jameson this year.
Next year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just next year because Deshaun Jameson wasn't playing at a really high level. I wouldn't doubt Deshaun Jameson's not starting next year. Is Ken Folk still here?
I don't know if Dunn's going to be back or not.
Okay.
Yeah. This whole COVID extra
year. I know the extra year threw everything off. I got to go do some research and find out if Darian Dunn's coming back.
They need to put that on all the rosters.
They do. The classification's gotten a little bit murky. But I don't know. The secondary's got a chance to be good. But that was the case last year, too. They had a chance to be good because they had a lot of veteran guys. Think about how many veteran guys are in the secondary this year. Schooler and Cook.
I know. Jameson, but I kept on saying that they're veteran guys that haven't been good.
And that's why these guys coming back, yeah, I'm happy. But
how valuable is experience when it's bad experience?
That's what we're dealing with here at Texas. Like, well, unless all these guys improve, there's no need to really celebrate them coming back.
No.
They need to improve drastically.
I wasn't celebrating last year with it. I was just thinking, okay. No. I was hoping there was going to be a turnaround.
You were right about the secondary last year. You were, I would say pessimistic, but you were just cautiously optimistic.
I was negative.
But you were right. You didn't see a lot of guys making plays in the secondary. But I will say this. I'm not making excuses for the secondary. They weren't put in a position to succeed a lot of times, in my opinion, because the front and the coverages are, they're not coordinated. Literally, that is the coordinator's job. And they were so bad in rush defense. I mean, this was the second worst rush defense based on yards per rush allowed in the history of Texas football. They allowed 5.2 yards per rush allowed.
Gary Arnell, early 90s, is that one of them?
1956.
Oh.
5.5 yards per rush allowed.
Of course, 56.
Yeah, that guy.
The poor 56 team.
Ed Price? Was it Ed Price?
Yeah. Everything's been just brought back.
Yeah. And that led to Texas allowing 6.1 yards per play, which is the most yards tied, actually, for the most yards per play allowed in the history of the program with 2019, Todd Orlando's defense in 2019. Mm. So the secondary, as we've pointed out, the observation, they really weren't exploited.
Mm-mm.
Like they should have been.
No, you didn't need to.
Yeah, teams were like, no, I'll just hand off the ball, work smarter, not harder. But yeah, I mean, it's a different Big 12 too, right? The ecosystem is different. Spencer Sanders was your first team Big 12 quarterback this year. He was?
Yeah, that guy threw four picks in a Big 12 championship.
That guy. So I don't know if the Big 12 is really in a position to exploit Texas in that secondary. Maybe they will be next year.
Excellent point.
Right, they really weren't in a position to, but, man, they ran the ball right down their throats. And I think Texas, that's why you're seeing the push to get front seven guys that can play. And they're going to play those guys right away next year. right away.
And that could be a sales pitch to Quinn Ewers by Texas and Texas Tech mm-hmm. that, hey, you know, you could be first team Big 12 quarterback next year. It's not like there's a lot of quarterbacks. Quinn Ewers in the transfer portal, and he visited Texas Tech this weekend. Sark had an in-home visit. It sounds like it's going to be pretty tight, man. If you're a Texas fan, don't be shocked if he goes to Texas Tech, and a lot of that has to do with the new offensive coordinator for Texas Tech, who's got the Patrick Mahomes connection. And as you brought up earlier, the quarterback coach, the individual, the private quarterback
Bobby Stroop. I hope I'm saying his name right. If I'm not Stroop, I hope I'm not trying to disrespect the man. But he is also Patrick Mahomes' private QB coach, and there is belief that Patrick Mahomes and Quinn Ewers have an open line of communication, mm-hmm. or at least they have him as an intermediary. And that you're right, that new Zach Kittley, I believe
Zach
is his name.
Yeah.
He came from Western Kentucky. They had a top three passing offense and a top three total offense in college football last year. Cliff Kingsbury disciple. And once again, at Patrick Mahomes' connection. So there's some excitement with him coming in. I think he's 30, so he's relatively young mm-hmm. in the coaching game. Quinn Ewers, I mean, we'll see. Quinn Ewers has made his money, so I know he wants to make more money, but he made $3 million reportedly in his name, image, and likeness deal at Ohio State, so maybe that isn't as big of a game changer as it once was.
That's a good point.
Because he's got some cash.
He's got some cash, maybe. And that's also one mm-hmm. of those where he's got to be thinking, well, if I made over a million as a fourth stringer, what am I going to make if I'm starting at a big-time program?
Oh, he's going to make some money as a starter.
He's going to make some
more. In any of these spots, I mean, it says Texas A&M and Texas Tech are the three top schools, but looks like, you know, Sark has already got in there for a meeting, and he's met with Joey McGuire already with Texas Tech, so we'll see. I don't know if Texas A&M is making as big of a push because they have a 2022 – well, Texas has a 2022 commitment, too, and Malik Murphy as well.
But they also have – who's the kid who went out this year? Who was a big-time recruit who got injured early on.
For A&M?
Yeah, and then you got Calzada, obviously, as well, including the recruit who you're referring to.
Yeah, they actually have some kid out of Houston, too, in the pipeline.
Haynes King is the guy I'm thinking of.
Great job. But they have another, like I said, I don't keep up recruiting. They have another one in the pipeline, too, for the 2022 class that they're bringing in, too, that's supposed to be a stud. Because A&M, actually, if they continue on this trend, I believe they're going to have the best recruiting class in the history of A&M.
It could be the top.
In terms of the rating.
Yeah, it could be the top class in the country.
Oh, there you go. Well, could be that, no doubt. Something else that's also the top class in the country, Bud Light. Speaking of, it's the top class of beers in the country. That's why I love Bud Light. My choice should be yours, too. Remember, this holiday season, keep the fridge stocked with Bud Light. It's the perfect beer for any occasion, especially those holiday occasions. And this holiday season, you want to make sure that you celebrate with Bud Light. You can be the life of the holiday party. Just bring more Bud Light to the holiday party. The best way to turn good times into great times and the rest of the times into the best of times. Also, if you're feeling a little bit lazy, you don't want to get out there, or you're just a little tipsy already. Maybe you polished off all the Bud Light at your home. And don't worry, you always can download the Drizzly app and have Bud Light delivered right to your door. That's a safe and responsible way to enjoy the sure sign of a good time. So, folks, remember, whether it be Mondays for Monday Night Football like today, you can always enjoy Bud Light. There's always a good reason to break out the Bud Light. It's my choice. Should be yours, too. All year round, Bud Light is America's beer of choice and the world's favorite light beer.
What are we ranting about here today?
We'll get back to the Quinn Ewers conversation. We'll talk quarterbacks, talk college quarterbacks, and why Texas, definitely needs to recruit Quinn Ewers, but also needs to keep Malik Murphy also in that 2022 recruiting class and go after Arch Manning. Yeah. All of the above is my answer to the question. Like, what do Texas do about the quarterback? Should they recruit this guy or that guy? Recruit all of them.
I'd still give one last pitch to Klubnik.
Thank you.
Whoever.
Amen, brother. Yes to that, too.
A ton of them.
That, too. I totally agree. I heard Bucky talking about it on Beanie. He was like, man, I'd be camped out at Klubnik's house. He was joking, of course. But I feel him, though. Don't give up on the recruitment. Like, I'd go in, if I'm starting, and say, hey, man, the last guys didn't really recruit you. That ain't on me. I think you're awesome.
Get as many as you can.
I think you're great. Yeah, get as many as you can. So we'll come back. We'll talk about quarterbacks and the Quinn Ewers recruitment. It's all up again. That's the beauty of the transfer portal. Recruitment, it's all over again. We'll get into that and more in Raj Rant of the Day right here on the RBKD, right here on 104.9 101.9 and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite
and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God! Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
Oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to RBKD. Time for Rod's Rant of the Day. I want to get into this Quinn Ewers discussion. Mostly talk about quarterbacks in this modern age of college football, where you do have the transfer portal, but you also have the ability for quarterbacks now transfer without penalty. All the players can transfer without penalty at least one time. And yeah, it's going to be a free agent feel to this whole thing. And it's going to be one of those situations where you either adapt on the fly or, I mean, you're just going to get completely overwhelmed by this new culture, and especially for the blue bloods. And I always say for these, you know, the quarterbacks, you know, even before the one-time transfer waiver rule, right, even before they could transfer without penalty, we saw the rise of the quarterback transfer market, right? And it was it was something that really kind of hit a boom around 10, I said maybe around, no, maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Hit the boom around 5 years ago. It started trending around 10 years ago, but hit a boom around 5 years ago where the stigma, used to be a stigma and a reputation attached to people in the transfer market or players in the transfer portal that they
had, suspicious.
Yeah, they had to go there because, you know, something went wrong in their career or usually because of their own fault, they didn't fit. It was kind of the island of misfit toys. That's not the case anymore. It is not the island of misfit toys. Now it is free agency. It is no longer considered something that is detrimental to your value to go into the transfer portal. As a matter of fact, it may actually increase your value as a quarterback, especially. So I wouldn't, I mean, and these are numbers before, like I said, the one-time transfer waiver rule. But these are numbers from a 24/7 Sports study that was done, 24/7 Sports doing a really good job over the years. But they did a comprehensive study about the blue chip quarterback transfer rate, and they did it over 9 years. They did it from 2010 to 2018. So they did a pretty comprehensive study. And what they found essentially was that your blue chip quarterbacks have a 50% transfer rate, 60% in places like the SEC, and maybe a little bit off in some other places, maybe like your group of five conferences. But for the most part, if you're recruiting a blue chip quarterback, four or five star quarterback, they have a 50% chance to transfer as soon as they step on campus. It's like when you buy a new car, it loses value as soon as you drive it off the lot. That's your quarterback. As soon as they step on campus, 50% chance they'll transfer.
Yeah.
Easy.
That's why you need a Scott Crossett.
Exactly. Boom. Get it in there. Nice. And I mean, the numbers are actually the higher you go up the blue chip status, 65% of top five quarterback recruits since 2011 have transferred.
65%. Damn.
So the higher you go up the food chain.
Right.
I mean, there's more of a chance they're going to end up transferring. Elite 11 quarterbacks have a 45% transfer rate for your Elite 11 quarterbacks from 99-2017. That's a smaller select group, but still, it's going to be 50 to 60% for your top quarterback.
That's kind of surprising because you would think the Elite 11 guys are going to go to a spot and
they do, but they
start and play.
But as we know about
the quarterback, the problem is another Elite 11 guy for the next year may come.
Potential the next year, exactly. But also what we know about quarterback is, as the great late great Bill Walsh said, it's a tough position to evaluate and even tougher to develop.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
It's almost impossible to really predict.
Yes, it's almost impossible to project based on the intangibles and the tangibles and whatever formula you want to put together. I always said everybody wanted to turn quarterback evaluation into a science, but it's more of an art form.
No doubt. That's
and
well
Bill
said.
Walsh, yeah. You know, he had that artistic eye, if you will, for quarterback. And even he, as you pointed out, what was the one that he picked? He picked one that was real bad.
Oh, hell, he had.
Bill Walsh.
Yes.
He always pointed out that he had a stinker on there, too. But he had a great one. Steve Young, of course, and Joe Montana. He even was a big Rich Gannon fan. People don't know that. When Rich Gannon was coming out, some people wanted him to play, like, defensive back or something weird. Because he was, like, in Richmond as a, what was it? I was, like, option quarterback or something. Like, he ran option or something back in the day. Anyway, my point is Bill Walsh was an artist in that respect. And quarterback, I think, at least the evaluation of it, is more an art form and less of a science. But everybody wants to make it a science. How big are his hands? Oh, how tall is he? How fast is he running 40? How fast? What's the velocity? What's the velo on the throw? Like, yes, all those things are data points, and beautiful for you to throw those data points into a, you know, into a formula to try to help you evaluate, but to lean over to overcompensate, if you will, and to almost rely too much on one of those data points is, in my opinion, that would be foolhardy.
Agreed.
Especially in quarterback evaluation.
Was it Rick Meyer, even though they didn't draft him, the Seahawks did, but he was talking about it?
Maybe it was. I know he had a stinker on his resume of somebody
that
he vouched
wrong.
For that he thought was going to be really good. Turns out they were not going to be that good. But here's the reason I heard some Longhorn fans talking about, well, if you got to be really delicate with the quarterback recruitment, because if you bring in a big-time quarterback and then you bring in another one, you're just going to force another one to transfer.
It was Meyer. He compared him to Joe Montana.
Ooh. See?
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly. Hey, everybody can be off about the quarterback position. It's one of those positions really, really tough. But the truth is, you cannot worry about the psyche of your current quarterback while you are recruiting quarterbacks. Everybody's going to lose quarterbacks. Look across the country at every great blue blood football program that's doing really well, even the ones that aren't doing well. They all lose these blue chip quarterbacks. They all transfer. And for different reasons. Some because they miss home, some for girlfriends, some because of competition, some because they don't like the coach, some because coaching change. It doesn't matter. It's gonna be a reason. If he's not starting, that quarterback is unhappy, that quarterback's gonna want out. And I
agree. Justin Fields claims he's getting racial stuff at Georgia.
What? Exactly. Yeah. And you know what? That's true. All those things may be true. But I'm saying you cannot account for all of the different factors that could end up leading to that young man transferring.
So stockpile the room.
Just stockpile the damn room. There's like socks and underwear. Just keep buying socks and underwear. You know what I mean?
The
like,
other thing, too, that position, if you are scared about competition, is that really the guy you want?
That's probably not the guy you want.
That's probably not.
You want that fierce competitor. But I will say more and more, you're seeing guys leave those situations.
Yeah.
So I don't even know. Like, I hate to judge that situation. Like Shane Buechele, right? Shane Buechele transferred but stayed with Texas that one extra year.
Helped them out.
And helped you bridge your quarterback development a little bit. And is the reason you made it to a Big 12 title game. Without him, you don't make it to a Big 12 title game.
You don't beat Baylor.
Right? So, you know, he was actually one of kind of the best case scenarios for a transferring quarterback. But even looking at Texas, this is why you have to just stockpile that damn room and bring as many quarterbacks as you can and let the chips fall where they may, because you don't control them. I looked at the last 15 years at Texas, right? So since 2006, looked at all the different quarterbacks Texas brought in. How many quarterbacks since 2006 has Texas had as a multiple-year starter?
Since 2006.
That they recruited. And by the way, I got the number at 22 now.
So Colt would have been 2005.
Well, 21. If you include Matthew Merrick, it'd make it 22.
Okay.
But I don't. Some people may include him as a great shirt. Some people may not. Whatever. But yeah.
I don't know. Two?
One.
One. And just Sam?
Just Sam.
Okay.
As a multiple-year starter.
I was thinking maybe Gerard, but yeah, or Tyrone. But yeah, that'd be it.
They never really met as a multiple year. They got that 1 year, and then after that, it was either a competition they were in or Tyrone went to the
18-wheeler
package.
Yeah.
You know, David Ash had that 1 year, but then after that, he dealt with the injuries and then the competition. Garrett Gilbert had that 1 year, but then after that, he dealt with injuries. Case had that, you know, kind of competition going back and forth with all the quarterbacks. Sam Ellinger is the only one in that time span that actually ended up being a multiple-year starter. You're talking about 22 different quarterbacks, man.
I think that also with the offensive line, you start to look back at the problems.
And a lot of it is problems, but you've had, 10 transfers. You've had two guys retire due to injuries. You had three different guys change positions on you in that regard. Since 2006, you've only had three different quarterbacks out of those 21 or 22, depending on, like I said, if you count Matthew Merrick or not, that actually ended up basically finishing their career as a quarterback at Texas. And that's if you count Tyrone Swoops, Case McCoy, and Sam Ellinger. If you count Tyrone Swoops, who essentially was a utility player at 18-wheeler package, a tight end in the league, and Sam Ellinger, your only multiple-year starter really out of that group that I would count. Although those guys got started in other games throughout their careers.
No, but you're talking about.
I'm talking about considering
the
starting quarterback for that season.
That's
the
way you
should
look at it.
Yeah, and Sam was that guy for 3 years, pretty much, right? Yeah. Sophomore year. Yes. His junior year in the senior year. He was the guy. The rest of those guys, there were questions. And then, of course, we're dealing with that again, right, with Hudson Card and Casey Thompson. So my point of bringing that all up is not to, you know, let you wallow in the quarterback hell that Texas was once in the quarterback purgatory they find themselves in now. But it is to point out how hard and difficult it is to hit on a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard. You're talking about 20-some quarterbacks. And if you consider a success story being a quarterback that is a multiple-year starter for you, you got one.
Yeah. Clemson dealt with that this year, and he was a five-star. And he looked in the two or three games that he filled in for Lawrence like he was going to be the guy.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So throw out the injury, right? There's an injury bug that could happen to these guys. Like I said, so you have Sherrod Evans who dealt with injuries. David Ash dealt with injuries into their career. So there's that injury concern. There's concern about the transfer rate. That's 50%, right? So 50% chance that guy won't work out at all. Add injury rate to that. What is that, 60% chance that it won't work out? Then you got to add change position. You've had three different quarterbacks change position. You had Gerard Hurd change position. You had Rojo change position. You had Kyle Loxley change. You had a lot of guys change position. So what about that? Throw that in there. So the 5% chance that it won't work out. And I mean, you start adding up all of the factors working against you, and hell, there's only probably a 25% chance that quarterback's going to even be capable of competing for a starting job. Hell, like I said, only three of those guys finished their eligibility playing the quarterback position. So you're talking about what, 14% of your quarterbacks you recruited since 2006 that even finished their eligibility playing the position.
That's a rough eval, but that's part of your Rod's rant.
I think it's like that for everybody. Yeah. I don't think this is isolated to Texas. I think if you did this study on,
many guys changing positions?
Oklahoma's are a little different because they got Lincoln Rileys of the world. But I think for most universities, this is probably the norm if you're recruiting quarterbacks at a really high level like Texas, and you've had the amount of turnover they've had too.
Mm-hmm, that's fair.
And that's, I don't know if other universities can recruit these top quarterbacks with this kind of turnover. Maybe you can look at Penn State. I don't know if Penn State had that much. Nobody's had the amount of turnover that Texas had and kept the recruiting
Texas still can pull guys.
Like USC, the recruiting fell off for them when they had all the turnover. We've seen that with the Florida schools. Like Texas still could kind of keep it, you know, with a top 10
USC,
recruiting
though,
class.
Was still recruiting good quarterbacks.
Yeah, there you go. It's a good point because they had that reputation.
And they're still bringing guys in, whether it's JT Daniels, Keaton Slovis, obviously Darnold before that, Jackson Dart.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure.
But USC and Texas have a lot in common there, where they can be down and you're still going to get some talent on that.
Yeah. I think it's a more money, more problems thing. I think it's just one of the byproducts of having the ability to recruit blue chip quarterbacks. One of the downsides of having a lot of money,
right?
You got to pay a lot of taxes.
Yeah,
like it's one of the things like more money, more problems. Like, I'll get all these blue chip quarterbacks.
Exactly. Throw it on me.
Every university out there say, "Well, I'll take that problem." You mean you have so many good quarterbacks in your room that some of them want to transfer? Okay, I'll take that.
Yeah, that's exactly what Ohio State's dealing with right now.
Exactly what Ohio State's dealing with.
You know,
well, Mac Brown dealt with it for years. Remember?
Yeah, he did.
Mac Brown at one point had in that quarterback room. This was when I was still there. He had Chris Sims, Vince Young, and Chance Mock. I think they were all 5-star quarterbacks. He brought in Nordko
and Matt Norgren.
Come on. But remember, you had your G.J. Kinney's and your Jevin Snead and all those guys that were transferring. Like,
hell, they were in on Eli Manning. We talked about that last week.
They were in on Eli Manning, yeah. So, I mean, it's a problem you want to have. You just have to manage it correctly. And the transfer portal should be seen as a resource to help you manage that quarterback volatility and not as something that's detrimental to you being able to do that.
Interesting thought experiment there. Yeah. That's good stuff, Rod.
It's hard,
and,
man.
Yeah, it is. And it also gets back to, we talk about development so much, the evaluation. And some of that, by the way, is just going to be luck. But if you've got really good evaluators, you're going to hit more times than not.
I agree with that.
Or you're going to hit more times than the coaches that don't have that skill.
Yeah, just anticipate. I mean, that it's going to happen. I mean, and when if you get in, and Sark has already said, or at least Chip Brown reports, I should say, and Chip Brown does a good job, that Sark wants to bring in a transfer portal quarterback, and he also wants to bring in basically two quarterbacks.
A veteran and then
another quarterback in the 2022 recording QB class.
Okay, gotcha, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Which would be Murphy, right?
Yes, I'm assuming that's, but I think he said in addition to potentially.
Okay.
So you might get another one in the 2022 class. Now, Quinn Ewers would be both.
He would be. He'd be the portal and he'd be that class.
His class is technically the 2022 class, is it not?
Yeah.
So.
Well, he also gets the red shirt.
Yeah, man, I'm actually so confused now about
classification
and eligibility status.
Because it's the four games, right?
Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. He is. He got all 4 years of eligibility left.
So. All right, good stuff there, Rod Zarrant. Get to hornfm.com. Get the Horn app. We'll talk about some of those bowls that are set. We've got Oklahoma State. They did not get into the playoff, but they've got a pretty good matchup. We'll give you those matchups up next. Happy birthday, John Reichel. We are playing John's, or John is playing John's favorite songs. They say, like, Rod and I are doing it as a birthday present. I may bring some beer in for you on Friday. How about that?
Hey, sounds like a plan to me.
Nice.
What is this right here?
Oh, this is Ween Ocean Man.
Okay.
Ween Ocean Man.
I don't think I've heard this.
I haven't heard it either.
It's an obscure band from the 90s, but they have a big cult following all the way through the 2000s, and I'm part of that cult. I really like Ween.
Northwest or national?
No, national, okay. Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely one of the weirder songs I have on this selection, but this is definitely for me and Hannah. This song's an inside joke between the two of us.
Oh, nice.
It reminds me of a television theme song.
Is this your song as a couple?
We don't really have one, but we joke that this is the closest thing we have, which is goofy because this song is... Listen to it. It's not a romantic dance song by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it's not. It's goofy.
I know.
Yeah. I was say, it reminds me of a television theme song, which I kind of like it.
Yeah. I'm kind of digging it, man.
Because you like theme songs.
Yeah. Good point. And I like goofy songs, so I think it hits me perfectly. Hey, you know what's goofy is that they have 91 bowl games this year.
Man, is that a real number or
no,
you just say that?
It's not 91, okay. But Rod, look at this. So let's start. So that's
what's
college
the actual
football
number?
Playoff. I can't find it. I'll count it here if you want to filibuster for about 3 minutes.
No, I'm going to look it up too. I'm going to look it up. I'll find it for you. But I'm with you. I don't know. I guess they're expanding. Every time I don't know if they even announce bowl expansion. Not college football playoff expansion. I'm talking about bowl expansion where they just add bowl games. I don't know how that works, but they're adding bowls. Like there are more bowls this year than I think there were a couple of years ago. And I thought they were trying to retract and contract bowls, but I guess that's not happening. More. It's more and more bowls. Tons of them.
It's over 30.
No, it's 40. I think they're like 41.
Jesus.
I believe they're 41, but I could be off about that.
It's just, yeah, and there's just not, I mean, this is why we were talking about the possibility of a 5-7 Texas team getting into one.
There are 43 postseason.
I love football. They don't need this many.
From the Bahamas Bowl on December 17th to the college football playoff national title game, there will be 43 postseason games played. And I believe most of them are bowl sponsored, right? So I think you're right, like 41, maybe 42, because I'm not sure if the national championship game is in like a bowl, considered one of those bowls.
It's that's a little. So the national championship will be played actually in Indianapolis. It'll be at Lucas Oil.
So, but it's not a bowl.
But it's not a bowl. Yeah, now, the semifinals is the Cotton Bowl and the Orange Bowl.
So maybe it's 42 then. Because there's 43 postseason games going to be played, and I believe all of them are bowl sponsored except for. The national title game.
Well, because you have the New Year's Six. Those are four games that are not in the playoff and then two that are in the playoff.
And those are all bowls. Actual
all bowls,
bowls.
Oh, yeah.
So it's 42.
Let's get to the New Year's Six games. You got Michigan State and Pitt. Pitt won the ACC, so congrats to them. I know it's incredibly down ACC, but if you're Pitt, you'll take that.
Man, Pitt has...
I was hoping Wake Forest would win.
You told me about the receiver from Pitt. What's his name? There's a receiver from Pitt that's really good.
You think of Purdue?
Oh, maybe it's Purdue. Okay, maybe it's a Purdue receiver that's really good.
Yeah, but Kenny Pickett I was telling you about from Pitt.
Yes. Okay, the quarterback.
Who had a great year, and now I'm seeing first-round stuff.
For Pickett?
Which I don't think is first-rounder.
Well, it's just because the quarterback market is
desperate,
down.
Man.
It's a little down this year. They said there may not be a quarterback in the top 10 for the first time since... It was like 2013 or something like that.
I can believe
it's
that.
It's been a while.
I mean, you can gamble on Corral, and I mean, I turn this into ripping on Kenny Pickett. Didn't mean to do that, but yeah, Michigan State, Pitt, that didn't do a lot. Ohio State, Utah is an interesting matchup in the Rose Bowl because Utah has a lot of Michigan in them, a lot of Michigan. Hey, fun fact, you know how much I love Polynesian players?
Yeah.
You know how many Polynesian players there are on the Utah roster?
Oh, I don't know, 20?
43 scholarship
I was
gonna
say, guys. Something ridiculous. Yeah,
like you could feel that with
no doubt.
With
they got
the toughness. No, they have a pipeline, yeah. And Kyle's done a great job. Whittingham really has that thing rolling. But that's what Ohio State, it was the physicality where they couldn't stop Michigan. We'll see if Utah can get pressure like Michigan did with Ajabo and Hutchinson and then protect the back end or defend the back end. So that's a good matchup.
That's a good matchup.
Baylor Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl.
That's sexy.
What a year for Baylor. Aranda goes 2-7 last year, yeah. And in his second year, they win the Big 12, and now they're trying to win a Sugar Bowl.
Yep. Got Jeff Grimes reinventing that offense with that wide zone. It'll be a good matchup, though, because Baylor, even though they do have some veterans who may be looking to move on, one thing to consider about these bowl games is, you know, some guys opt out if they're thinking about the next level.
True.
Baylor's one of those teams that really can't afford that, so I wonder if, because it's such a special season.
Yeah, Ole Miss, all the guys is it Corral, committed. Is it Ely?
I mean, that's always a big concern. I was talking to Chad about that, and even for the Aggies, right, in their bowl game, that would be a concern on the defense more so. I think on offense, they're really young.
Oklahoma State, they were a yard away from getting to the playoffs. This has to sting.
Couldn't be the guy to the corner.
Couldn't be, yeah, that couldn't was it.
If Jalen Warren was there, they'd have won because they'd have punched that in.
Yeah,
Jalen Warren is that much of a difference maker with the physical running game.
And they're probably also not relying on Spencer Sanders with the four picks early on in that game as much as they were.
Also true.
Give Baylor credit. Baylor flat out won that thing. It was a tight game. Notre Dame, Oklahoma State in the Fiesta Bowl. You know, it's funny because I've been talking about both those teams all year because they've kind of been around the same spot. I really believe that there was probably anywhere from 2 to 11 could – maybe not 2, maybe 3 to 11 or 12. Any of those teams, depending on the matchup, depending on the day, could beat each other. There's just not a lot of separation in college football. And when I look at that game, hell, I have no idea. Either team could win that game.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's why
we're like 50-50 either team.
We may have a great bowl season because of all the chaos you talked about during the regular season. There are no dominant teams anymore. And if you go look at, you know, the top 10, top 12, 15 teams, you would probably say that 3 or 4 through 10, maybe 4 through 12, can all beat each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really could.
Like, oh, on any given Saturday, that team could beat that team.
And it just depends on the matchup. Just
depends on the matchup, depends on where they are. Yeah, and I think you're right about that. I think that's why the bowl season may be really especially delightful this year.
Yeah, it's going to be up in the air. This was a
Wake Forest A&M? I think it's kind of sexy.
I do too.
Like, I want to watch that game. But now I wonder, Wake Forest, they're going to be all in.
The Tax Slayer Bowl.
They're going to be all in for that game. A&M, they might have some guys decide, nah.
DeMarvin Leal has already said he's going pro, but I don't think he put anything on if he's going to play. But if it's a Tax Slayer Bowl at 11 a.m.,
he's not going to play in that game.
He's probably not going to play in that game.
That also is the biggest factor in the bowls that we just can't anticipate. Who's going to opt out? And I'm not hating on them if they do. Smart move for some of them.
No, I get it. I get it. As I've always said with that, it depends on the bowl. It depends on how good it is. And it depends on you. So I got on Malik Jefferson, rightfully so, because I didn't think he had proven enough. And he ends up sliding in the draft, and he's been all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, he hadn't been able to stick on a team.
Yeah, no, you're right about that.
So if Malik Jefferson was what he thought he was, I can understand sitting out that game. But you weren't what you thought you were, if I had to write one motto for the Texas football team and the players, that would be at the last 10 years.
How many times have I made that mistake? I wasn't who I thought I was.
Yeah, we've all been there.
But I wonder if name, image, and likeness, having a little bit of cash will influence the decisions of opting out early.
Oh, interesting.
Just having a little bit of cash. You know what I mean? Yeah. It just change everything when you got some money in your pocket.
Oh, yeah, it does.
You are a different person when you're walking around with some money in your pocket.
As opposed to being broke?
Yeah, you're a lot more kinder. You're willing to be a lot
different
more loyal. You're
like, John's giving us a look like, yes.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how little cash in your pocket affects loyalty.
It does.
So I wonder if it'll have an adverse effect, or maybe a positive effect.
I'm excited about the Alamo Bowl. You got 2 10-win teams, Oklahoma and Oregon, with probably 2 new coaches. Well,
wow.
Definitely one.
That is so true.
Well, actually, definitely one. Definitely two.
Both
what
of
am
them,
I talking
yeah.
about?
I wonder if
this stuff is moving so quickly. I'm like, yeah,
who
crystal ball happened.
Bob Stoops is going to be coaching the bowl game, correct?
I believe so.
So who's coaching it for Oregon? We don't know quite yet. I don't know if I've heard about the interim yet. Who's going to be the interim coach?
Oh, you know, it'd be great if they brought back Bilotti. That's kind of their godfather, right?
That's a great point. I don't know. What is he doing? I don't know.
Bilotti?
Yeah.
I think he's still involved with the program.
That's
in
good,
some
then.
Way.
Maybe.
Clemson and Iowa State, that'll be in the Cheez-It Bowl.
That's kind of sexy.
Yeah, it is. And we'll see if Clemson's offense started to wake up a little bit as the season kind of ended.
Ooh, Texas Tech versus Mississippi State in the Liberty Bowl?
In the Liberty Bowl.
That's sexy. Mike Leach versus his old team. Oh, I'm tuning in.
Mike
six
Leach.
And six versus 75, and that's still sexy. I like that.
That's where they got to be really smart. That's where they've got to put up matchups like that.
Yeah.
The NCAA basketball tournament at times will do that, where you go, okay, you know what? This may not be the sexiest matchup on its face, but if you really look at it, there's going to be something kind of cool about it.
Tuning in for that one.
Houston and Auburn, they're going to be playing each other. Lots of Texas schools in no Texas.
Ah, sorry. UTSA versus San Diego State.
Frisco Bowl.
They should have gave them something better than that, but those are two good teams.
Yeah, San Diego State is going to win that.
Ooh, I like it.
UTSA is good. I've watched them, but
San Diego State's
there's a lot of competition.
Okay.
That's a lot of that is about competition. All right, we're three in. We got one to go. We are going to recap the NFL, also get into some of those great college games that we saw over the weekend. It's RBKD, and this is The Horn.